Today, the bulls roar some more despite the cockroaches lurking. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics World, and it's Post covering finance and property news. This is our weekly market update where we start in the US, cross to Europe and Asia, and end in Australia, and we cover commodities and crypto along the way. Well, October is living up to its status as the most volatile month of the year, as markets reach new highs despite signs that cockroaches are hiding in the woodwork from rising private credit risk, liquidity concerns, and rising delinquencies, especially in US credit cards. The global MSCI index reached another high at 1.78% across the week, while the Stoxx 600 in Europe rose another 1.68%, and the ASX 200 came off slightly, having also touched new highs earlier in the week, and the S&P 500 also closed higher on Friday. Expectations of further policy easing and upbeat corporate earnings are playing into the hands of the bulls for now, as cooler than expected inflation data and upbeat corporate earnings lifted all three major US stock indices to all-time closing highs on Friday, setting the stage for next week's earnings reports and an expected interest rate cut from the Federal Reserve. Earlier, sentiment had received a boost while the White House confirmed that US President Donald Trump would meet his Chinese equivalent Xi Jinping in South Korea during next week's APEC summit, a development that buoyed markets after recent heightened US-China trade friction. That said, Trump also said that all trade negotiations with Canada had been terminated, accusing Ottawa of using, quote, a fraudulent advertisement involving the late President Ronald Reagan, who actually spoke out against tariffs. The CPI report provided a rare set of official US data, as releases have generally ground to a halt following the more than three-week current government shutdown, which was driven by the congressional budgetary impasse. And of course, that has disrupted most official economic reporting. The Labour Department's Consumer Price Index remained elevated in September, but was a bit cooler than analysts had expected, calming fears of an outsized impact of tariffs on inflation, at least for now, and all but locked in a 25 basis point rate cut at the conclusion of the Fed's monetary policy meeting next week. The US Consumer Price Index rose 3% annually in September, below the 3.1% expected, while the monthly gauge rose 0.3% below the 0.4% that was expected. The so-called core consumer price index, which the Fed assesses as an underlying measurement of inflation in the world's biggest economy, was at 3% year over year and 0.2% on a monthly basis. Analysts anticipated readings of 3.1% and 0.3%, which would have both matched the number in August. Employment data, though limited by the government shutdown, does show increasing concerns from alternative sources. The ADP private payroll series reported net job losses in three of the past 4 months, while the ISM data suggests employment contraction also. Household sentiment has deteriorated, with more than 50% of households expecting unemployment to rise over the next 12 months, and business services aren't painting a particularly upbeat picture of the state of the economy, according to ING, reinforcing their expectations for Fed rate cuts both in November and December. 85% of companies that have published their reports, though, have exceeded forecasts. This high figure indicates their resilience in the face of tariff threats and political uncertainty. According to JP Morgan, the S&P 500 issuers will see about a 12% profit growth in the third quarter. That is significantly higher than the consensus forecast of Wall Street at 7.7%. So stock markets continue to go on the negative, with a focus on the good news. Perhaps investors are revising their views, though, because there are growing trade uncertainties. And in that context, investors seem to be in no hurry to buy up failures. According to research from Goldman Sachs, purchases of the S&P 500 after the pullback are from sellers closing short positions, and if so, the stock market will continue to consolidate. Nevertheless, the equity market has shown remarkable resilience over the past 2 weeks, despite rising US-China trade tensions, a spike in equity market volatility, and growing credit concerns tied to business development companies and regional bank lending losses. But talking of cockroaches, perhaps the most notable development has occurred in the money markets. last Thursday week, for instance, the Federal Reserve's standing repo facility, the SRF, was tapped for $8 billion. It was then tapped again for $2 billion last Monday. The SRF is a permanent tool that the Fed uses to keep short-term interest rates stable and to ensure the smooth functioning of money markets. It operates by offering overnight loans to banks and eligible institutions in exchange for high-quality collateral, such as US Treasuries, with the collateral repurchased the following day at a modest interest cost. The SRF is really meant to serve as a safety valve of sorts. If banks can't easily borrow cash in the market, they can turn to the Fed at a set interest rate. Through this mechanism, the Fed can prevent sudden spikes in borrowing costs and help alleviate short-term run-of-the-mill funding pressures. While the SRF is offered daily, usage outside of typical quarter-end liquidity crunches is pretty unusual and may signal that system-wide liquidity is beginning to tighten more meaningfully. This matters for equities because abundant liquidity is inherently supportive of risk assets. Conversely, when liquidity conditions become tighter, investors tend to become more selective, and that creates a potential headwind for risk assets such as equities. While sporadic draws on the SRF do not constitute a trend, if usage of the SRF becomes more persistent, it could be a clear indication that liquidity is starting to meaningfully tighten and present a dynamic that equity markets would likely find difficult to ignore. In short, these early signs of tightening liquidity warrant close monitoring, at very least, as signs of more persistent stress in the funding market could easily shift the risk back with the drop for equities. Anyway, at the close in New York, the benchmark was 0.8% higher at 6,791.69. It earlier peaked at 6,807.11. The Dow rose 1% and the Nasdaq Composite 1.2%. As a result, the S&P 500 and the Nasdaq recorded their largest weekly percentage gains since August, while the blue-chip Dow logged its biggest Friday-to-Friday jump since June. Tech once again led the overall market advance, solidifying its momentum-driving role. Information technology and communication services led the S&P 500 industry sectors higher. IBM was the Dow's top advance, leaping more than 8%, and Intel surged after the semiconductor beat expectations for its third-quarter profit, helped by dramatic cost-cutting measures. Nvidia regained a $4.5 trillion U.S. market valuation, and Apple renewed its efforts to reach $4 trillion U.S. dollars. Six of the Magnificent Seven rose, but Tesla slumped 3.4%. Alphabet gained ground after Anthropic expanded its deal to use as many as 1 million of Google's artificial intelligence chips to train its Claude chatbot. Alphabet's shares advanced 2.7%. Elsewhere, Target announced that it would cut about 1,800 corporate-level roles, representing about 8% of its global headquarter workforce in a major restructuring initiative. And Coinbase Global got a 9.8% boost after JP Morgan upgraded the stock to overweight from neutral. Ford jumped 12.2% after beating third-quarter profit expectations, and General Dynamics also surpassed estimates, sending its shares up 2.7%. Looking ahead to next week, five of the Magnificent Seven are reporting results, including Apple and Microsoft. After having spiked towards 29 in the middle of the month, the VIX has now retreated below 17. There are bubbles out there, market strategist Ed Yardini said in the note. They will burst because that's what bubbles do. However, they are unlikely to follow the script of the great financial crisis. They are more likely to create buying opportunities in various asset markets, which is what happened when the previous everything bubble burst. Among the reasons for Yardini's optimism is that he expects the US economy and price-to-earnings ratios to remain resilient. And as for worries about circular financing fueling AI investment, since much of the funding today is coming out of the strong cash flows of the hyperscalers, he says if these companies are forced to reduce their spending due to excessive capacity, their profits and cash flows will improve. The Fed is expected to reduce rates two more times this year, with a quarter percentage point cut baked in for the October 28-29 meeting. Dollar index, which measures the greenback against a basket of currencies, fell just a little to 98.94, and the euro was up just a little too, at 1.1626. Against the Japanese yen, the dollar strengthened 0.14% to 152.88. US Treasuries were little changed to modestly higher. The benchmark 10-year yield briefly turned lower after the CPI data, but was last up 1.2 basis points at 4%. The yield, however, was down about 1 basis point over the week, its fourth straight weekly decline. Oil prices, which have risen 5% on Thursday after the US sanctioned major Russian oil companies, eased on Friday as skepticism crept into the market about the Trump administration's commitment to the sanctions. US crude fell to $61.44 a barrel and Brent eased to $65.69. China's expanding oil stockpiles and new sanctions on Russian exports could reshape global oil balances, according to Bernstein, though the near-term outlook remains tilted towards oversupply. Bernstein strategists note that the golden age of China's oil demand growth is over, with consumption expected to rise by just 1% this year as electric vehicle adoption accelerates. In effect, strategists say it's the pace of inventory fill rather than end-user demand that's driving China's oil imports now. Global output currently exceeds demand by about 2 million barrels a day. The second major variable for oil prices lies in Russia. Newly announced US sanctions against Rosneft and Lukoil, an escalation of restrictions, target roughly 1.5 million barrels per day of seaborne exports. That's about 30% of Russia's total shipments. While a full disruption could tighten markets significantly, strategists believe such an outcome is unlikely, as Moscow likely has contingency routes and buyers in place. Now, gold had an interesting week after I suggested last time that it was exceedingly overbought in what proved to be gold's eighth highest overboughtness episode on record since 1971, when the dollar was severed from gold. High-flying gold finally started wobbling last Friday, falling 1.9% in its worst down day since the middle of May. All that selling came early on and wasn't actually that news-driven. Gold immediately recovered from that wobble on Monday, soaring 2.8% to another record, $4,350, which was 33% above its 200-day moving average. Weekend reports of silver shortages in India looked to fuel big overnight buying in Asia and Europe. Then on Tuesday, things got really nasty. Gold was pummeled overseas, heading into the US session with no apparent news catalyst. By the time the dust settled, gold had plummeted 5.3% in that single day. That was its biggest daily drop in 5.2 years, and shockingly, one of the largest ever. By Wednesday, gold's total drawdown was 5.7% over two trading days. This volatility? Well, surely this is meant to be a safe haven. Wow. Huge down days are always problematic. Yanking herd sentiment sharply bearish. They are never a good omen, especially after massive bull runs resulting in extremely overbought technicals accompanied by greedy and euphoric sentiment. So odds are gold is entering an overdue correction phase, likely a major drawdown necessary to rebalance all the recent extremes. And that doesn't bode well for the miners either. Gold was last at $4,126.90. European shares closed at a record high on Friday, boosted by cooler-than-expected US inflation data and hopes of that easing US-Chinese trade tensions. As investors assessed a slew of corporate earnings, the continent-wide Stoxx 600 closed up 0.2%. The Stoxx 600 closed at a record high on Thursday, led by gains in energy stocks after the US imposed new sanctions on Russia, while investors also gauged the health of corporate Europe from a batch of earnings reports. The continent-wide benchmark ended 0.37% higher at 575.76 points. Most major regional indices ended higher too, with London's FTSE also closing at a record high, and the CAC 40 was last at 8,225.63. Energy stocks gained 2.7% and marked their strongest session since the middle of April as crude prices soared 5% after the US slapped those sanctions on major Russian suppliers over Moscow's intensifying war with Ukraine. On the face of it, the announcement of sanctions by the US on Rosneft and Lukoil is a major escalation in the targeting of Russian energy sectors and could be a big enough shock to flip the global oil market into a deficit next year, said David Oxley, chief climate and commodities economist at Capital Economics. That said, the lasting impact on the oil market and oil prices will depend on how long any sanctions remain in place and how effectively they can be enforced. Meanwhile, quarterly updates from European companies were in full swing as market participants looked for signs of whether trade uncertainty was impacting corporate profitability. Luxury goods stocks gained 1.2%, with Kering jumping 8.7% after the Gucci owner said sales in the previous quarter declined less than analysts had expected. On the other hand, travel and leisure stocks slid 2.2%, hit by a Dow forecast from Sodexo and disappointing results from Evolution. Both stocks lost 7%. Shares of STM Microelectronics were halted multiple times during Thursday's session and last settled 14.1% lower as the chipmaker forecast fourth quarter sales below market expectations due to weak automotive sales. Dassault Systèmes was not far behind with a 30% loss after the French software company cut its full-year revenue growth guidance. Earnings of 50% of the stock subsidiary companies that have reported results as of Tuesday exceeded analyst estimates, according to recent data. That's lower than the 54% beat seen in a typical quarter. Among others, SAP's shares were volatile and finished 2.2% higher after Europe's largest software maker announced better-than-expected results. However, the German company forecast full-year cloud revenue at the lower end of its outlook range. Switzerland's exchange slipped 0.4%, limited by drug maker Roche, which was 3.2% down after sales of new treatments for eye diseases and haemophilia disappointed the market. Industrial companies proved the biggest boost, up 0.7%. Lifco gained 10% after posting third quarter results above estimates, while Saab added 6.1% after the defense group raised its full-year organic sales growth forecast. Financial stocks also supported, with the LSEG group jumping up 5% after some brokerages raised their price targets on the stock, and NatWest rose 4.9% after the lender reported a larger third quarter profit and upgraded its performance target for the year. Better than expected US retail sales for September and Eurozone business activity for October also did cheer investors. The UK private sector economy accelerated in October, and the S&P Global Flash UK PMI Composite Output Index climbed to 51.1 from 50.1 in September, reaching a two-month high. Manufacturing production expanded for the first time in 12 months, while services maintained modest growth. The manufacturing output index surged to 51.2 from 45.7 in September, hitting a 30-month high. The overall manufacturing PMI rose to 49.6 from 46.2, though it remains slightly below the 50 threshold that separates growth from contraction. UK real sales increased by 0.5% in September, according to data release from the Office of National Statistics on Friday. The monthly growth figure surprised economists who'd been widely predicting a decline for the period. September performance represents only a slight decrease from August's revised 0.6% growth. It was driven in part by a rise in jewellery sales as people went for gold. But UK car production fell 27.1% in September due to a cyber attack. Asian stocks rose broadly on Friday, led by gains in technology shares, as news that the US president was meeting the Chinese counterpart next week helped ease trade tensions. Investors also digested Japan's latest inflation and factory activity data while awaiting key US inflation numbers later in the day. South Korea's Kospi led regional gains, rising over 2%, to hit a fresh record high of 3,941.59. Chipmaker heavyweight Samsung Electronics rose 2%, while SK Hynix shares surged more than 6%. Chinese equities gained after the Communist Party unveiled a new five-year economic plan that emphasized advanced manufacturing, technological self-reliance, and stronger domestic demand. The policy framework reinforced optimism that Beijing is committed to sustaining growth through structural reform and innovation. China's blue-chip Shanghai Shenzhen CSI 300 rose 0.5%, while the Shanghai Composite Index gained 0.3%. Hong Kong's Hang Seng advanced 0.6%, and the tech sub-index jumped 1.5%. In Japan, economic data painted a mixed picture. Data showed that core consumer prices rose 2.9% in September from a year earlier, while the broader core measure, which excludes both food and energy, climbed 3%. National core CPI, which excludes volatile fresh food prices, also rose to 2.9% year on year in September. That's from 2.7% in August. A core inflation reading that excludes both fresh food and energy prices fell to 3% year-on-year from 3.3% in the prior month, remaining largely sticky and, well, frankly, well above the Bank of Japan's 2% annual target. Uncertainty over the full impact of US trade tariffs on Japan has kept the Bank of Japan from hiking rates in the near term, but sticky inflation, especially in underlying prices, will keep the Bank of Japan geared towards an eventual rate hike. The inflation backdrop comes as the new Prime Minister assumes office, advocating expansive fiscal stimulus and promoting looser monetary policy, a stance that may complicate the Bank of Japan's path to tightening. Her government is reportedly preparing a large stimulus package targeting inflation relief, high-tech investment and national security. The readings, of course, remain above the Bank of Japan's 2% target, fueling expectations that policymakers will discuss an eventual tightening at some point. In other news, Japan's factory activity for October slipped to its weakest level in 19 months, signalling continued contraction in factory output. The services PMI also eased, but remained strong amid robust domestic demand. Japan's Nikkei 225 jumped 1.3% on Friday, while the broader topics rose 0.6%. India's Nifty 50 closed down a little, 0.23% down on Friday, possibly reacting to the oil issues with Russia and the US. The Australian share market eased back on Friday, with the ASX 200 down 0.2% to 9,019, pulling away from its record high set on Tuesday. It still posted a weekly gain of 0.3%, though, in the second consecutive week of gains. The All Ords slipped 0.1% on Friday. Five of the 11 sectors finished in the green, as gains in technology offset losses in healthcare. Energy stocks rallied as fresh US sanctions on Russia's two biggest oil companies over the war in Ukraine fueled oil supply concerns. Beach Energy rose 0.4% to $0.255, and Woodside rallied 1% to $24.40. Shares in Santos fell 1.2% to $6.37 after Chairman Keith Spence provided no clarity on the abrupt resignation of the chief financial officer. The mining heavyweights, though, rose, with Rio Tinto up 1.5% to $181.82 and BHP up 0.5% to $43.24. Iron ore was last at $104.45 in Singapore. Critical minerals producers continued their spectacular week after Alba's agreement with Trump, though it's mostly smoke and mirrors, actually, as I'll explain in an upcoming post. However, Mineral Resources was up 6.5% to $44.94 and IGO up 8% to $5.82. Meanwhile, PLS climbed 9.1% to a one-year peak of $3.23 following upbeat quarterly results. The lithium miners' shares have nearly tripled since early April. In other commodities news, gold prices further retreated from the record high of $4,391.21 set on Monday. Newmont was among the biggest losers, down 4.4%, $127.15. Evolution Mining fell 1.1% to $10.50. Elsewhere on the ASX, the big four banks all fell, led by ANZ down 1% to $30.64. CBA was at $170.37. NAB was at $43.25. And Westpac was at $38.87. Macquarie was at $225. And in corporate news, Whitehaven Coal fell 0.4% to $6.98 after quarterly results showed the company burned $200 million of cash over the 3 months to December 30th amid weak coal prices. The three-year treasury was at 3.396, while the Aussie was at 65.14 US cents and 48.93 British pence. Reserve Bank Governor Michelle Bullock said in a speech this week that banks must shift to stronger encryption standards to protect the payment system from the looming arrival of quantum computing, describing the powerful emerging technology as a big threat to data security across the economy. If you believe that what they say on the tin of quantum computing, what takes 200 years to decrypt now to break will take a matter of minutes. So it is a big threat, she said after delivering a speech at an event hosted by the Daily Telegraph in Sydney. Certainly, it's something I worry about. In the cybersecurity industry, the time when quantum computers arrive with enough power to break current encryption methods is known as Q-Day. Financial regulators around the world are concerned that if quantum technology falls into the wrong hands, bad actors will be able to use it to break standard encryption known as the RSA algorithm, which is used to secure global payments and transactions. Over in crypto, Bitcoin rose 3.86% from recent lows and was last at $111,750. Ethereum was last at $3,951.80. JP Morgan says it plans to accept Bitcoin and Ethereum as collateral for institutional loans by the end of 2025. On the surface, this looks like another milestone in crypto's march towards mainstream finance. But beneath the headline is a structural tension, a 24/7 global asset class interfacing with a banking system built for business hours. That mismatch creates new contagion paths that didn't exist before. In traditional finance, collateral management operates on predictable schedules. Stock markets close, settlement cycles are measured in days, risk teams assess exposure overnight, margin models assume market downtime for adjustment and response. But Bitcoin and Ethereum trade continuously across fragmented exchanges. A 10% intraday move, which will be very severe in equity markets, is common in crypto. When these assets back JP Morgan loans, the bank must monitor valuations in real time. A Sunday 3 a.m. flash crash could instantly push loan-to-value ratios out of tolerance, triggering automated liquidation mechanisms before human oversight even wakes up. April 25 offered a bit of a preview. Nearly $1 billion in Bitcoin future positions were liquidated in a single day, with long positions absorbing most of the damage. So far, those liquidation spirals have been contained within crypto markets. But JP Morgan's move changes that by linking crypto volatility to corporate credit lines, wealth management portfolios, and institutional balance sheets. The bank first explored Bitcoin-backed loans in 2022, then shelved the program during the crypto credit crisis. The key difference today is sentiment, not structure. As Bitcoin recently hit new all-time highs, regulatory conditions have eased, and institutional demand has grown. I discussed all this with Adam Stokes last Tuesday on my live show, which is still available. But none of the underlying fragilities exposed in 2022 have been resolved. They've simply been overshadowed by price momentum. Academic research now shows that crypto has shifted from a shock absorber to a shock transmitter since 2020, meaning volatility increasingly flows outward rather than inward. And also, starting January 2026, Basel III rules will require banks to hold capital equal to the full value of most crypto collateral. That's effectively a 100% risk weight. If a bank must hold $100 in reserves to support $100 in Bitcoin collateral, the economies break down unless loan spreads widen significantly. And also elsewhere, Ferrari is tapping into crypto markets and tech-rich youngsters with a planned new digital token, with its wealthiest fans able to use it at an auction for a Ferrari 499P, the endurance car that won three straight Le Mans titles. The plan for now is limited in scope and is an effort by the Italian sports car maker to tap into a trend among luxury brands seeking access to the growing wealth of younger tech entrepreneurs as AI and data centers drive investment and markets around the world. It comes after Ferrari, which is also developing its first electric car, began accepting Bitcoin, Ethereum, and USDC for car purchases in the US in 2023 and extended the services to Europe last year. So Ferrari is now working with Italian fintech Conio to launch the token Ferrari 499P, for members of its Hyper Club, which groups 100 of the most exclusive clients with a passion for endurance races to trade amongst themselves and bid on the racing model. It is set to debut with the start of the 2027 World Endurance Championship season. With prominent backers, including US President Donald Trump, crypto prices have surged, but regulators warn loose oversight and speculative trading creates risk for investors and financial stability. Remember that Bitcoin was up 6% over the last year. But here we are again. More cockroaches. Wherever you look, turn them over and they jump out. And this is a problem. We are trying to assess the risks in markets, that are actually really overvalued at the moment. And of course, many traders are still trying to justify higher. But I do think the risks are still there for people to see. So caution is still worth, I think, holding on to for the moment. There is still lots of the unknowns out there. But more importantly, crypto has now invaded or become part of the core financial system. And to that end, the original objectives of crypto have probably disappeared into something which is now, well, just another speculative engine, which may not be good for investors in the long run. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.